bring Coach Al Brown in here. Coach Brown, my answer to that question was Wilt Chamberlain. What is your answer to that question? The best college basketball player you've ever seen, Coach?
You're talking about one for 1 year? Now, if you got a good point for 1 year, but if you go over time, there's no question you've got to take Walton and Alcindor. Those are the two most dominant players ever to play college basketball. They won three national championships. There was no way you could beat those teams. So Walton's performance in the championship game in St. Louis was something that no one saw before or has seen since.
So you say Bill Walton and Lou Alcindor. What about, Coach, in the last 30 years, if you had to take one guy from college basketball in the last 30 years who, in your mind, is the best player, who would wear that label? And I'm not sure it's Jordan. Who is it in college basketball? Who is it?
Oh, it's not Jordan in college basketball, no. One of those two guys, I guess, in the last 30 years, both of them played in the last 30 years. So.
Coach, that was not 30 years. 1970 was 40 years ago, Coach.
Well, they played the last 40 years, and that's the point right there.
Are you a clown?
Tony, you lose track of time after a while.
Hey, Brownie.
That's another good question. Man, oh, man. I don't believe I can answer that as one player in the last 30 years.
Isn't that the problem? That's the problem, isn't it? In the last 10 years, you really can't answer that question because college basketball has become a bunch of players. And you told me this was going to happen one day, but it really has happened now. I mean, there are no stars anymore.
Tony, it's sad. You watch some of those scores in men's basketball. A 47-45 with a minute to go. I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. There are no stars. There's a lot of decent teams. People put it up. They say, well, the defense is much better. The defense is not much better. The shooting is much worse. And so you don't have a lot of emphasis for young players to work on their shooting, to work on their offensive skills. It's dunks. It's drives. It's penetrate pass. It's hold the ball. Now, I fault coaches for this. We're going to work the shot clock down, and then we're going to take a shot because we're afraid to run up and down with anybody because we might miss and they might make and so on and so forth. So it's a combination of both, but you're exactly right. There, you go through this NCAA tournament this year and you try to point out star players, and you're hard-pressed. I mean, you can point out some young men that have done a pretty good job at times, but superstars, not so much.
And that's the deal. I mean, I go back to the early 80s and the late 70s, and the stars that played college basketball back then, they were everywhere. They were absolutely everywhere. And it's still a great event. But on the women's side, that's one thing I'm going to say for the women's game. On the women's side, you've got the mystique of superstardom still left. And a couple players come to mind. First of all, Brittany Griner, who, incidentally, I'm not going to try and get you in trouble, but she didn't play in the Olympics last year when she was given the opportunity, which I thought was a curious decision on her part. It seems almost unfair that she's in the women's game, but that's another story for another day. She's certainly a dominant force that bears watching when she's on the court simply because she's so freaky and so much better than everybody else. And then you've got somebody like this Deladon, who transferred from UConn, who has Delaware in the Sweet 16, Coach Brown, comfortably. Delaware. She scored 3,000 points. She took a year off and played volleyball. She's got 3,000 career points, Coach. She's a freak.
She is the best player in the country. Griner is not the best basketball player in the country. She is a most dominating because of her height and because women have not been used to playing against somebody like that. But Deladon is by far the best player in the country. Averaged over 30 points a game in every NCAA game. And as you just mentioned, has carried Delaware, who has never been anywhere in basketball, to the Sweet 16, all on her ability. And she's terrific. I mean, she is really, if you haven't watched her, folks, watch Delaware play. She is absolutely outstanding basketball player. Skylar Diggins from Notre Dame is an outstanding player and has more of a team concept with them. But Deladon does it all. She's 6'5 point guard who can post up and play the five position. So she's really, really outstanding. So there are three really prominent stars in the women's game right now that have advanced in the tournament. And that's a great point that you're making in regard to the men's tournament and the women's tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the men's tournament, you know, Duke's there. They're okay. And, Michigan State's there, and they're pretty good. And Michigan's there, and they're pretty good. But there just aren't any stars.
Right.
There just aren't any stars in that game. Now, it's still a great event. You know, look, when you have Florida Gulf Coast 15 beating a 2 and resounding fashion and then turning around and beating a very good San Diego State team, that's a great story. You have LaSalle Explorers getting the Sweet 16, that's a great story. When you have some of the other compelling stuff that's going on in this conference and Florida matching up with Florida Gulf Coast Friday night, you know, there are some really terrific stories and great games to be had. But on the women's side, there's at least some beef there. There's at least some stars. And the questions about Brittany Griner, Coach, to me only make it more interesting. I mean, when I look at her, I kind of think to myself, how fair is this? Do you ever have that thought when you're watching Baylor play?
I guess I don't, Tony. I can see where you're coming from, and I think many, many people feel that way. But having come from the men's game, she's not anything that's unusual as far as what I've seen in basketball. So, yes, she
right.
is tall, and she does have some talent. But that can be offset if you have the ability with your team and the knowledge from a coaching standpoint to negate her. I mean, you can affect her play in a game. So, but she certainly is a presence, and there's no question about that.
Great Al Brown joining us today. Last year, a year ago this time, I said, Coach Brown, who will cut the nets down? And you looked over at me, Coach, through the phone, and you said, Baylor will cut the nets down, and it won't even be a contest. I'm going to ask you this time, take Duke out of the equation. Who will cut the nets down?
I think you have to go with Baylor. And the reason you have to go with them, they've only lost one time, and that's when Odyssey Sims, their great point guard, was sidelined in Stanford early in the season. Since then, they've run the table. They didn't lose last year. They've been dominant so far in a weak section. They really didn't have any. They haven't been challenged in their bracket. So Baylor, it will take whoever happens to play them when we move forward to the Final Four and the championship game. It will take an excellent effort to beat that team, because not only of Griner, but the supporting cast. She's got some good people around her. If she wasn't on the floor, they still are among the top 10, or would be among the top 10 teams in the country.
Coach, in your humble opinion, let's say out of 10 chances, okay, what percent chance do you give my Lady Vols against Baylor if they can get there in the round of eight?
They played earlier in the season. I'm sure they learned some lessons. Harrison's back. Graves has had a fantastic year, and I'm talking about, of course, the inside play. The Tennessee guards across the board can make shots and can make some plays. I give them a shot, but it's going to be
what an uphill percentage?
Battle. Harrison and Grace can't get in foul trouble, which is a problem when you play Baylor, and it's a problem depending on who's officiating the game.
Okay, I'm going to ask you again. What percent chance do you give the Lady Vols to win that game? You give them like a 5-10 chance, 2-10 chance, 1-10 chance, 0.5-10 chance?
Oh, I'd say there's 70% chance they could win it.
A 70% chance? Are you
sure?
Are you what, a breathalyzer? A 70% chance that they're going to beat Baylor?
No, they.
You on the golf course early tonight?
No.
You already on the golf course?
They've got a shot at it. I'm giving the Volunteers 70%, baby.
Coach, what's your take on Holly Warlick and the job she's done thus far?
Tony, I think it's been fantastic. I don't think anyone, everybody thought Holly should have the position, and she should have had the position, but no head coaching experience, and I mean, five new players coming in and starting. I think a finish in the Southeastern Conference anywhere in the top three would have been great. Four or three would have been great. And then to win it, I think anybody would have felt good about them being in the NCAA tournament this year. And whatever they did would be gravy. And certainly advancing to the Sweet 16 is outstanding. So I think Holly deserves as Coach of the Year in the Southeastern Conference and has done a wonderful job. And, of course, we're all measured by our success in this postseason, unfortunately. So that will be part of the story as she moves forward. But super job.
How fair is it, Coach? How fair is it? How fair is it that you're judged by the postseason when you've got a Brittany Griner in your bracket, which really is not fair?
Oh, yeah, I think you make a great point there. That isn't necessarily fair. I mean, I think in Holly's case, for Tennessee right now, they have done a super job, and losing to Baylor, if in fact that happens, would certainly not be a disgrace. And it would still be a very successful season.
How would you gauge you guys' potential to get to the Final Four, and mark out the other teams for me from here that you think are in? You think Baylor's in? Who else?
Baylor, Notre Dame, Connecticut, Stanford. The number one picks would be the favorites to be in. We have a very tough test with Nebraska on Sunday. Then if we pass that, we've got to play Notre Dame in all probability. And we played Notre Dame a year ago, not this past year, but a year ago in the Bahamas, and did a nice job against them. But they've proven by beating Connecticut three times this season that they are really legit. We have an outside chance. Notre Dame, Baylor, Stanford, Connecticut all have better than average chances or really good chances of advancing. Kentucky could give Connecticut a battle if they get past Delaware, but
the heat between Geno and Pat Summitt, was it really real? And was it real when you were there? Did she dislike him back then? Did they dislike each other? Did he do things to gig her? Can you give me any insight as to why we stopped playing them? What the real story is? Do you feel comfortable talking about that?
Oh, yes, Tony. The real story is when I first started with Pat, they had not embarked on a series. And we talked extensively about that, and I didn't think it was a good idea to play them and give them any legitimacy. But Pat, who has always wanted to elevate the game of women's basketball and would play anybody, anywhere, anytime, felt that it was a good idea and pursued that idea after the 95 loss in the national championship. And they played home and home, and they both they got along fine. She got along a lot better with him than I did. So they had a very competitive, but a very good relationship for all those years until Maya Moore's recruiting came along. And when Maya Moore was being recruited, Pat, in her wisdom, knew that Maya Moore, whoever landed her, was going to win a national championship. And if it was Connecticut, it was going to be them. Tennessee, it would be them. So she did everything possible to recruit Maya. And I believe, now this is the part I do not know for sure, but I think Maya, on her visit to Tennessee, probably committed to Tennessee, but said she was going to visit Connecticut. And then when she went to visit Connecticut, they did all the ESPN things, and they did the Diana Taurasi and other prominent alumni influential persuasion, and she felt that that was done unjustly and it wasn't right, and called them on it, but they didn't feel, and no one else felt, including the NCAA, that there was anything done wrong, and that started the rift between the two.
Isn't that interesting that, because in a men's game, when somebody's committed, you keep recruiting them. You turn guys all the time, right?
Oh, yes, Evans, yes. In the men's game, and you've done this forever, Tony. You see that, in the men's game, I come to Tennessee and visit, I commit, then I go to Kentucky, I commit, I go to someplace else and I commit. I mean, so you just keep playing it out to the end, and you just hope on signing day or somewhere close to that, the guy makes a decision that he stays with. So that's been the case in men's basketball, football, for years, forever, I guess we can say now. But women, that's been they have a little more idea of what's right or just, I guess.
So you're telling me you believe that that there was some really bad blood there at the end.
Oh, absolutely.
But again, something happens. It must have gotten personal. For them to quit playing, it must have gotten personal. I mean, is there anything else? Because I just can't figure out what, you know, we've all heard all kinds of, you know, different sorts of potential rumors. I mean, how dirty does the recruiting get in the women's game? I mean, does it get personal?
That one did, because of the way Gino handled the conversations with Pat and everything else regarding Maya's recruitment. That was all that was. I mean, I don't know what everybody's heard or what all the stories are, but that's the story. That's the factual part of the story. That all brought about the split between the two. And but in the women's game, there's not a lot of that recruiting, that type of recruiting. It's still a pretty fair recruiting situation. If you work hard, there's not so much of the other going on as there is in the men's side.
Hey, Coach, why did Kelly Jolly Harper, former Lady Vol, get axed over at NC State? What's the story there?
Tony, it was interesting to come over here in this area, having never been here. When I came 6 years ago, you listen to your talk radio, you read the local newspapers, and North Carolina State, there's three schools, of course, North Carolina, North Carolina State, and Duke. North Carolina State is a large state school and a very, very good school, but they're ignored. All the conversation is about Duke and North Carolina. And basically it's driven by basketball. And so whether you're an in-state recruit or certainly a national recruit, you like Roy Williams, for example, or Mike Krzyzewski, you like what Duke has to offer or North Carolina. But there's no glitz or glamour or anything in North Carolina State. So whoever comes into that job, and Kelly inherited a tough situation following KL, whoever comes into that job, and I don't care whether it's on the men's side or women's side, you have an uphill battle with the total community here and what they call the triangle of convincing people that North Carolina State's a good idea to go there. And so what happened was she wasn't able to recruit the talent that was being recruited by Duke or North Carolina. and she wasn't able to win those games. And now she won a couple times against Carolina and beat us in the ACC tournament last year, but hasn't been able to sustain a level of excellence. And then, if you're at State, you're compared to North Carolina and Duke. In men's and women's basketball. So Duke's done this. North Carolina's done this. What have we done? And the answer was, the administration didn't think she'd done enough.
Coach, appreciate your time. Always a pleasure talking with you. Maybe one more chance on Brittany Griner. Are you concerned, you know, about what could be? Or are you satisfied?
Well, I think everything's been discussed, and we're all going forward.
Brownie, when are you getting back, and when are we hitting the links? Because I got to see that golf swing that literally every chiropractor in America wants the American male to learn, because you are a chiropractor's dream. You're like Mr. Salty out there, the way you twist yourself in a pretzel with a golf club in your hand.
Tony, I appreciate you bringing that up on a consistent basis, but other than your wife, Laura, there's no golfing skill in your family. Maybe your kids have picked up golf. And
yeah,
they have both
surpassed me.
It would be a thrill to be on the golf course with you and to again whip you like I did several times in the past.
Coach, always a pleasure spending a few minutes with you, and I hope you have a great day, and I hope you guys get a win coming up in your next round. And then also, Coach, I really want to see, and this is what I really, really want to see, is you guys back in the Final Four, because you get it absolutely done. And every time Duke's on, I turn, flip it on and watch you styling and profiling in your Bert from Soap looking ways. You're my main man, Richard Mulligan, Coach Al Brown. I love you.
Hey, Tony, love you, and everybody in Knoxville, hello. Glad to be on the air. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. It's always a pleasure to share airtime with you and certainly the folks in Knoxville. I'm sorry to do this on the air, but I mailed you something this fall and I got it back. So off the air, would you have somebody give me your address so I can send it to you?
Briny Boy Hartman, do that. Give Coach Brown, Briny Boy Hartman, my numbers, and I'm going to get Coach Brown's numbers from me, Briny Boy, his updated information. Coach, you're my main man. I love you.
All right, Tony. Thanks a million.
The great Al Brown, ladies and gentlemen. You bow your head when you say that name.